Welcome to another episode of Subscription Radio. Today, I'm really happy to have our expert guest, Matthew Holman. Matthew is the head of growth at QPilot. He has a background in SaaS, does a lot of content marketing and educating people around subscriptions. You know, Matt, I don't know if there's anything you want to add on top of what I just said, or even just some of the brands. Yeah.
I just love working with brands. So I get in there a lot with brands and helping them figure out their problems. So yeah.
Yeah. And part of what Matthew and I were talking about ahead of just starting the episode was a few themes, one of which is the future of subscriptions and how as more and more brands are offering subscriptions, what can you as a brand or what can brands do to remind people of the benefit of subscribing and reinforcing that? Because it's easy to forget, like, why am I subscribed to this thing that might have like a $25 recurring charge? And then, you know, specifically, you know, part of what we'll dig into is what are some of the more interesting things that Matt's seen and that what I've seen in with subscription brands. I'll say one thing, that Matt has a cool newsletter on subscription dose, which we'll include in the show notes.
Yeah, subscription prescription.
Prescription. Yeah, that's just the right dose.
It's a mouthful. Subscription prescription, your weekly subscription dose.
I do like the alliteration. I just kept thinking medicine, but...
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. Yeah, no. So let's get right into it. I know one of the things that Matt was talking about was the brands that they typically work with are, you know, we'll call them generally largely in the range of like $3 to $20 million your integrations for currently for WooCommerce. Let's get into just sort of what you're seeing and what you've seen done well and interesting within subscriptions. And if you have any subscriptions yourself, I guess that's how I like to start this off is, do you subscribe to things?
I do. So I found CBD, well, Delta 8 about a year ago for sleeping. So I have a subscription to that, just a small brand. And then I actually have been a Dollar Shave Club member for a long time. And I love Dollar Shave Club. They're, you know, I mean, obviously a lot of their product and software is like homegrown and home built. So it's not this, like, you know, I sell SaaS, so I'd like to have that be easily offered so everybody could do something like that. But the idea that you can like easily change and add things that they upsell, they have a large diverse SKU available, I think was what kind of makes it kind of fun. One of the limitations to it though, is I was thinking of, and this is kind of where I'm getting at with some things that are new, is there was not that long ago where my handle on my razor, like, wasn't working anymore. So it was really, really hard to like actually shave my head. And so I went, it was easy to, you know, get, pull up an email. I click the link, I log in, I order a new one. You know, I'm expecting to get it within a couple of days. It doesn't show up. You know, I email support and they're like, oh, well, it's, you know, basically they're using, so I have a shipping background too. So they're using Mail Innovations. They're using 7 to 10 day shipping, even though they're in California and I'm in Utah. And there's no real tracking involved because basically that kind of service, which a lot of subscription offerings uses, it just kind of gets there when it gets there. And so eventually I actually had to go out and buy a pack of razors. I was so tired of using that. For me, it was worth $10 to go buy another 3-pack, even though I only need one to go be able to shave my head a little bit. And so some of the innovation that I'm seeing in a lot of subscriptions is, you know, we started with this concept of like a box subscription, right? And the beauty thing about a box, as far as operations goes, it's very predictable. You don't have to track inventory. You don't have to worry about shipping. People are expecting to be surprised. They're expecting to, they just get it around the same day of the month. And it's really easy from an operational standpoint to do that. And from a brand experience standpoint, people are more interested in what's in the box than about when they get the box. But what's changing now is we're seeing so many more brands that are going from one time to offering a subscription, whether it's pet food, whether it's CBD, whether it's razors or you know, essential oils and all these other different types of products, supplements. People actually are starting to have expectations around when they need that. And if you can't meet that expectation, they're going to stop. They can go to next day or 2 day on Amazon, or they can go to the CVS down the street, right? So I'm seeing a lot of brands now that are more interested in delivery and shipping outcomes, where they want to know when they're going to get it, and they want to be able to either have a service that's faster or be able to pick the service on a subscription order. And that's where a lot of the discrepancy is on, you know, like a shopping cart, you can pick whatever you want, right? Like a lot of brands are really good at offering that, you know, that option. Subscriptions is like still like 10 years behind where you don't see that kind of thing, right? Like, anyway, that's where a lot of the changes is that I'm seeing.
Interesting, right? Yeah. So like if you want to pay extra for expedited shipping, yeah, and you're right. I actually haven't seen that myself on any subscription dashboards. And part of that too is, yeah, part of it's because it's not through the checkout, and typically shipping is where, you know, you're effectively picking your shipping rate.
The other thing is, like, there's a huge rise of, like, fresh food and fruit and meat. And, like, you know, I know some customers are selling, like, kombucha and raw juice and the types of things that will spoil if they're, you know, they can't take 7 to 10 days to get there. They need to get there in 1 to 2 days and often need to be packaged with something that's cooling. And so for them, the delivery is, like, really, really important. Like, if there's a big gap in when you're going to get it and the customer doesn't realize that it's in the mail already, they might go to cancel and now you lose the shipment completely, or it arrives, you know, for those types of businesses, especially with COVID, like the desire to be able to want to order fresh food delivered straight to your home, like, rose drastically. It's for pets as well. And so if you can't offer that as an experience, like, those businesses are facing this kind of, like, they're between a rock and a hard place. It's like, I want to be able to offer subscriptions, but if I take somebody outside the cart, I lose all this functionality, and it goes pretty well, but they churn people because something goes wrong.
Right. So it's like almost, again, I guess going back to when we were talking about customer experience, a lot of it's around lack of transparency into what stage you are or what phase into the fulfillment process you are, and how a lot of things that happen automatically on the initial order around tracking and, you know, control over shipping method is more or less not baked into a lot of the subscription platforms.
And operationally being able to offer, like, okay, again, if it's just mail innovations, it's just like, you know, it gets there when it's get there, fine. But what if my customers want to pick up in store, or they want it delivered, or what if it's a local delivery app that I want to use, or local delivery service? You know, those types of things aren't readily available from an integration standpoint, right, into the shopping cart, let alone a subscription order. So a lot of these businesses that are, like, local or regional, they have really strong regional presences and they use regional delivery. They're trying to innovate and find solutions that allow them to integrate shipping as an option into the subscription order.
Yeah. I mean, so have you seen, or is there anything that you guys have done to try to improve that experience on the customer experience? Or is that oftentimes a limitation of these third party, like, fulfillment apps, for example?
Yes and no. So, like, we have done. So, like, I mean, one of the reasons I joined QPilot is because of my background in logistics. Like, that was the marketing I did at a previous company, was just shipping technology. So we do have a USPS integration so that somebody can update or see live rates, like, in the cart, kind of like how much their shipping is going to cost. And then we also have an integration with a technology called ShipperHQ, which I'm not sure if you're familiar with, but they're fantastic for, like, delivery outcomes and rates and stuff. So we don't have a ton of people using it, but one of our merchants, Renova Worldwide, uses them so that they can see international shipping rates on a subscription order, as well as delivery outcomes, because they're selling all over the place. And so they were running into issues where there was a discrepancy between the price and the checkout, a price and the price they thought the customer was going to get. And if you're off on international order, you can be talking $30, $40, $50 an order, right? Because international rates can change so much, right? So they needed a live integration to be able to see kind of that.
Got it. I guess even, like, shifting gears into some of the, like, that's a great example of one way that subscription brands or brands can do a better job, or an opportunity rather, for both on the software side as well as on the brand side to provide a better consumer experience. The teardowns you've done, part of what I appreciated was you were talking about, and even, like, making it simpler for brands or consumers rather to be able to approximate how much product they need, because that's, again, one of the challenges. And I'll say that we can even talk maybe, like, around, like, shelf stable products, because I'd say that's, like, an entire category versus perishable products. Like, if you're ordering coffee, you know, the amount of coffee you're going to purchase, well, I don't necessarily know how much I need of your product, right? Like, if your suggested frequency is once every 2 weeks, once every 4 weeks, how does it actually translate into, well, you know, if I were to think about it, like, how many cups of coffee do I have per day? How big is my coffee cup? Do I like it particularly strong, in which case I'm probably drinking more coffee?
The more you make a consumer think about how much they need or not, like, they're gone, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, so it's funny, we were talking about shipping, which actually matters a lot more to perishable goods, but talking about consumption and, like, how much you need does, it's for shelf stable products. It's thinking about it in a holistic view, right? It's not like a lot of the reasons why people don't like subscriptions or they cancel subscriptions. You hear it all the time in any survey, any brand, any industry, is I'm either worried about having too much product or I have too much product. You know, and so I don't want a subscription because I don't want a shelf full of crap that I'm not sure when I'm going to use, right? That's a really common thing. So approaching the problem from the perspective of helping to educate somebody on how much they need. So a couple examples is, like, if it's something like it's a bottle and it's 30 pills in a bottle and you're supposed to take one a day, I get that that's obvious, but you need to make it even more obvious on the product page. There are 30 pills in this bottle. You are supposed to take one a day. So your subscription should be one a month.
Yeah.
Literally being that explicit. Now, if it's anything more complicated than that, like with, you know, I Heart Dogs, they just redid their whole page because they found that the number one churn reason they're getting is people didn't know how much product they have, and dogs are all different sizes. So they designed a product page where you pick the size of your dog and it estimates how much dog food you should have, and it pre-selects, and they were able to see like a boost in AOV because they were now selling like two bags at a time instead of just one. And as well as their like LTV went up because they were now churning less people over time. So for me, it's a good, another good example, CBD or supplements. Like the assumption is if I sell a bag of protein powder and there's approximately 60 scoops and how many people are taking one scoop versus two scoops? That's the kind of the gray area. Again, the pill is really obvious. Pet food might be really complex. This supplements is in the middle. It's like, okay, I might take one scoop, you might take two scoops, Ben, depending on like what workout routine you're on versus I'm on. Like if I work, if a day and or I go travel and I don't bring it with me and I skip it for 5 days, and now suddenly I've got half a bag left when my subscription's supposed to renew, or I've got a bag and a half. And so without even getting too far into technology and how you can like create automation and flexibility and all this stuff, it's really just about messaging. It's like if you're communicating with the customer, email, text, saying, hey, your renewal's coming up, asking that question, how much product do you have? Go look. Because if you've got enough, click this link, pause, skip, push out the frequency. Like the whole idea is to retain that relationship. Don't give them a reason to churn. And so I know a lot of brands feel like if they remind people that they could do that, they're like, you know, suddenly gonna lose all their customers. But I look at it from the other side, which is making it communicating and being upfront, that transparency, and then actually understanding what your consumer's using, it means you're going to keep people around longer.
Yeah. No, I think there's nothing worse than just getting like you have an order shipped on its way without getting a reminder ahead of time. Right. And I think, yeah, it's a funny balance of, it's a lot of what we've been thinking about is the brands who are winning are oftentimes the most consumer centric. And it just, as a customer or as a consumer, it makes a lot of sense. I want to know how much I'm spending. I want to be able to feel in control of my, I hate to say pocketbook, that's so antiquated, my MERS. I want to know how much money, protect my MERS. But no, it's the experience and just being able to have control can go so far where, yeah, you are going to lose potentially some customers, but ultimately being able to provide people the opportunity to swap or be able to even use that as an opportunity to upsell, or as you've written, is basically reinforcing the fact, hey, here are the benefits of a subscription, because it's not, from the brand's perspective, what they're looking for is recurring revenue. From the consumer's perspective, and I said this before, like consumers don't give a shit about subscriptions. Like subscriptions is a business model. What they want is the product when they need it.
Remind them why they bought the product. Like, hey, Ben, how's your workout going? Like, how's that plan going? Like, is this helping? And if it's not, or you're like, ah, you know what? I hate this. I'm not using this product anymore. Then that's an opportunity to upsell or try something else or try something different. I think we talk about the future subscriptions. I mean, this is not too far of a pipe dream or pie in the sky, is the idea of like, you know, while this supplement might be on average taken every 30 days, for a 42-year-old white male in Utah, it's every 27.
Yeah.
And so I'm now on a 27-day subscription, right? And if I make a change or a pause, there's a machine learning that's going to know, oh, actually, you know, you need it every 25 days, and triggering the shipments to happen. So you're getting it like the day before you need it, right? Or 2 days before you need it. You're never getting too much. You're never getting it late, which is the other huge problem, right? Of like selling out of inventory or having it arrive so that you go shopping somewhere. It's like I had to do with those handles.
Did you end up keeping your subscription?
I did, just because.
And just like holding on to the extra? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I did. You know, there's like in medicine cabinet somewhere is a, you know, an extra just generic razor to use in sometime in the future. But the product is that good, and I do like what they offer. And so I'm staying on it for now, at least.
Well, and I think what's interesting about that is this idea of a buffer. I know that for me personally with subscriptions, I tend to actually want to be like, oh, I'm on a, one of our subscriptions for our household is doggy diapers for her dog. And the worst thing is running out. And so what I actually will do is I'll actually buy a subscription to something, but I'll always also buy a one-time purchase. So I always have like that little bit of buffer. And it's almost like there's a lot of I think, attempts, especially when it comes to technology, to try to engineer a solution for everything, when ultimately it can come down to what's a better way of, is what's like a design, how do you design a solution? You don't have to use algorithms for everything. It's really, as you were saying, like, how can you do a check-in? I guess, and that's actually something that, I don't know if, I'm curious what you think about that, but like, in a way that's not inconvenient. Like, so for example, if I were to get an email or a text message right now saying, hey, go check how much of your product you have left, I'm not sure I'm going to get up right now, leave my desk, go into the cupboard. And, you know, I think we've been trying to think around, like, what are smart or clever ways of trying to almost recalibrate along the subscription cycle, especially during the initial period, of just gauging how quickly are you going through product without it being inconvenient.
Absolutely. I think, I mean, that comes back to that brand premise. Like, I mean, the best brands are doing fun or creative ways of reminding, like, you know, I Heart Dogs is all about every purchase is donated to other dogs, to shelters and stuff like that. So part of their messaging is reminding people that they're saving dogs every time, right? So, you know, you're buying this for your pet, but you're saving other pets, right? So if it is part of that communication, if it's a question of, hey, you have an upcoming subscription, like, even if it's not something so much forceful, it's like, hey, how much do you have on hand? Or do you have enough or do you have too much? And just something just soft so that somebody's thinking about that. And I like sending two notifications. Like, personally, I recommend always send two, right? Send one a little ways out and then send one the day or two before, so that there's some kind of, like, it can be in your mind. Like, if I say, hey, Ben, like, your subscription's going to process in 10 days, you know, how much, you know, protein pad, how many doggy diapers do you have left on hand? And then you're thinking about it, and maybe you check, maybe you don't, but then you get another one the day before saying, hey, Ben, you know, this is set to fire tomorrow. You know, you may wouldn't say fire. This is set to go out tomorrow. What do you think? Like, because that kind of just, you know, it's, again, it's trying to stay top of mind, trying to be useful without being too pushy. Every brand's going to be a little different. You know, there are some brands where they could message 100 times a day and they're going to get all kinds of positive reactions. And others, like, you send one email a month and I'm unsubscribing. So it is something that each brand has to figure out with what their consumers are happy about. You know, talking about the future, one thing I don't see a lot, but you see in regular e-commerce is, you know, asking people how they want to be communicated with. Do you prefer text or email? Subscription brands could be doing the same thing. Like, hey, which way do you want to be notified? Which way is easiest for you? And again, thinking about it from the, like, reverse engineering is, like, if you're telling somebody, I don't want you to get a subscription or you don't want, right? Like, because that's, again, one of the top fears of why people don't subscribe is they're going to forget. I don't want you to forget. This is the brand talking. What's the best way to communicate with you? What's the best way to remind you that this is happening? Getting that kind of data up front is would be really, really useful.
Yeah. I haven't seen any studies around sort of the impact on LTV around just that communication. I don't know if you have.
We have studies related to when people make changes.
Right. No, I've seen those. Right. Like, the impact on LTV.
Yeah, but not necessarily. Yeah. Notifications is something that, like, I would always stress as part of the, you know, like, when you're studying churn analytics, right? Of, like, how you're communicating with people. Can you A/B test that, right? To see this cohort versus this cohort, if I send an extra notification or not, or one less, if that's going to make any changes or impact. That's not necessarily where I always, that's not where I start testing. I do advise brands to, they need to be doing that. But the other part would be, before I even test how many messages, it's testing what's in the actual messaging. Because one of the easiest things to change, you know, again, a lot of this comes back to, like, how much do I need to pay a developer to do this versus how much can my marketing person make some of these changes? And so thinking about copy is one of the simplest ways is, you know, look at your email messaging, like, look at the email templates you're sending out. Like, what are you actually saying in there? Is it like, hey, Ben, your order is about to process. Cool. Like, Ben might be opening that email a lot to try to make sure he's not forgetting or not. So are you, again, reinforcing the why behind you bought this, the benefits of that? Hey, you know, in case you forget, like, you can manage it or skip an order here. Those types of things are great to include in those kind of, in your notification systems.
Yeah. Are there any, I'm curious, like, any sort of subscription experiences or anything else that comes to mind to you that, or any sort of, oh man, that surprised me. That, like, in terms of just delightful subscriptions.
I would say some of it actually was, like, it wasn't even related to the subscription part itself. It was the content they were sending me as part of that. So it was like some gluten-free bread that I was subscribed to for a little while, and they had the best newsletter, and it was recipes. And it was just like, they weren't like necessarily like a huge brand, but like the time and care that would put it, they put into that was like, it was really, really nice. Cause, and I got some cool recipe ideas out of it, you know? So I think that one's a big surprise. I think, I mean, there's some fun things around like different stuff people are doing, but as my own personal experience, like that's probably the top one that comes to mind is actually content.
Yeah. Which, you know, I think it's the challenge there is content is, it's like, is it content you provide all everyone? Is it content you just provide subscribers? Like, is it a benefit for the membership or the subscription level? Cause at a certain level, you would almost want to make it available to everyone because it gives a reason. A, it improves your, we'll call it the brand affinity. And if this is useful, like it's still relevant if you're buying it one time. Yeah, I think that going back to things that are challenges, but also the brands who are doing really, really well, it does seem to be that they have really good content in a sense of, I don't want to call it a sense of community. Like Advil doesn't have a sense of community. but like, what are the, like Mudwater comes to mind in terms of a great brand who, I don't know if you're familiar with Mudwater.
I'm not.
So it's effectively like a coffee like substitute. It's like Four Sigmatic, like in that, like some mushroom, it's a substitute for coffee. And so they have like a number of SKUs and it really is like almost like a lifestyle, and they've done a great job around branding and messaging and content. I'd say recipes.
That reminds me of Liquid Death, right? Like it's water in a can and it's really fun. I mean, their content machine and their culture that they've crafted around that are pretty incredible. I do think it comes down to like, you know, one of the teardowns we did was this product Renova Worldwide. They sell these like, you know, like vitamin packs, like to try to like help your brain health and mental health. And, you know, they're trying to tell people their messaging, you know, is that this can be life changing or life saving. And so the idea that they're not reminding somebody that this is supposed to impact their life in a very strong and powerful way every time is a mistake, right? It's a gap in their messaging. So depending again on how you're building that, like gluten-free bread, there's a lot of people that can't eat gluten, right? So that's a community opportunity right there. It's a feeling of belonging that somebody understands you. So depending on how you're approaching your brand is, again, honestly, it's really hard to advise a company that does not have a great brand and how they should change their subscription. There's a lot of technical stuff and a lot of offer stuff, but you know, you can only get so far with testing how far discounts are going to go or free product is going to go if you can't reinforce something a little bit, just even a little bit bigger. You know, for me, the Dollar Shave Club is very utilitarian, but that CBD company or the Delta 8 that I buy, like if they don't really do a lot, but if they did anything related to like sleep community or the benefits of Delta 8, like I would be very interested in engaging in that type of content because I do believe in the product. It's been helping me. And so I would be more likely to engage with that and engage with other people and relate to it.
Yeah. Makes me think around like for brands who are listening, and I'm not even sure what the breakdown is. I'm curious of how many D2C brands truly invest in content besides just, we'll call it marketing.
Right. I mean, it is fascinating. I haven't seen big numbers on that either, but it, you know, great homepage is a place to start, but that's just step one. That's not really brand, right? That is again just kind of marketing. But you know, again, like not to say I'm missing out on somebody selling pet food and they feel like they're not very innovative in pet food. Like again, there's a lot of innovative pet food brands where they're using different materials or ingredients and you know, that kind of lifestyle. But you know, I think the CBD space is a good example, like we mentioned before about the saturation, like on a, you know, Patrick Johnson on one of your other episodes was talking about the saturation of the space, right? So CBD is a great example. There are CBD brands springing up all over the place. It's a huge, massively growing market. I think it has a long way to go still because adoption rates are still pretty low. But how do you differentiate yourself, right? Like, are you trying to be the end all for everything? Or are you just trying to find a niche? You're trying to speak to this type of consumer. You know, this is for people with muscle soreness. This is people with sleep deprivation, things like that. So it's just a kind of a common, I would say maybe taking a step back is if you're already in business, like I'm assuming like a lot of people listening to this are already selling, whether they're doing subscriptions or not, or they're at least doing one time, you've got a ton of data already. Like if you should be finding out, like doing regular surveys of why people are buying your product, why they're buying it one time, segment that. Why are people buying a subscription? If somebody opts into that subscribe and save option, they should be getting questions directly related to why they chose to pick that. Understanding if that person picked that after doing it one time or not is a really good stat as well. Like, is it somebody who came in cold or relatively cold, you know, attribution stuff on that, and they picked it? Why did they pick it? So getting that data from your own customers is the best place to start. Understanding what they like, why they bought it, that lets you craft more, like double down more on the brand, double down more on the messaging. It allows you to focus more on conversion efforts. If people have questions related to like, well, you know, I tried this or I had a question about this, like what kind of questions you're getting in your customer support channels, right? Your customer support emails. You know, that's how you craft a good conversion, a good highly converting landing page. And that's how you craft a high retention subscription program, is understanding the reasons why people try it, why people stick around, and then ultimately why people will stop using it or cancel.
And actually, that reminds me, one thing that I asked brands to look at is, of people who canceled their subscription, looking at how many people still continue to purchase a la carte afterwards, because that indicates it wasn't a brand product per se. I mean, it wasn't a brand product. They were canceling your subscription for whatever reason, but they still loved your product. They weren't breaking up with you. It was for something to do with the subscription. That's worth digging into. What's funny though, is there's actually no easy way, at least with most tools, to be able to identify, to go into that sort of granularity of show me everyone who like canceled a subscription and then continued buying. Like, so I'll speak to like the Shopify world where, you know, you'll see purchase frequency and orders, but you can't actually, even in analytics, it'll show you cohort analysis. It'll show you how many people are retained on a subscription. But again, you can't get into that sort of granularity of show me everyone who canceled and then show me the people who bought once, bought multiple times, and then basically could go back to them and offer like a personalized subscription or something in that realm.
Yeah, no, you can't. I mean, honestly, Excel is still the tool of any good marketer, right? That's literally what you have to do, is like pull out lists and do some VLOOKUP tables and pivot tables to get that information, and then manually upload a new segment into Klaviyo or whatever tool you're using, right? That is the only way to do it. But that, I mean, honestly, that's a great approach to understand, like, again, like understanding why people are canceling, you know, a good pop-up or something. If they're pretty mad or pretty disappointed when they do it, they're more likely to tell you why. But yeah, it's oftentimes it's not the product problem. It's they had too much product, or they did not like the subscription. They didn't feel like they forgot 1 month, or they were out of town for a month and they didn't like that they couldn't cancel it. Like, you can learn a lot from what people are running into as friction points.
Yeah. And I think that's interesting, like, especially with now that COVID's opening up, part of, especially for people who are in like their 20s, maybe in 30s, like this nomad, we'll call it not nomad culture, but being able to work from anywhere, where you might be one place for 1 month, one place somewhere else. It's like it reinforces the importance of reinforcing where are you shipping the product to, right? Like in the email, saying, not just saying, hey, your product's coming up, but hey, here's the shipping address. Is it going to change? Like, actually, Quip emailed me the other day and showed me the address, and it was actually my old address that I had moved from a year ago. And I was like, I'd still been receiving my Quip, I think because of my mail forwarding, but it's great that they actually showed that to me in the email, because I honestly would not have even thought to check that.
So how easy was it to change it? I'm curious with Quip. Like, were you able to just go into the My Account page? Okay.
It was easy. It was like one click.
Okay.
No, so what they did, as I recall, was they deep linked you into the portal to the page where you can update your subscription. So they effectively had like a call to action within the email, saying, hey, it's coming up, take a look at, you know, your shipping address and stuff, and then clicked, and then I was able to just quickly and modify my shipping address. But that, it's things like that to me, which from a design perspective, you know, we can build technology all day long. A lot of this really comes down to how can we be more nuanced and thoughtful.
Yeah, the user experience. Yep, completely.
Which is funny, because like Amazon, I don't think has done a great job with, they're amazing around fulfillment. Their subscription program, generally speaking, is fairly convenient, but it doesn't really communicate much to me. It's still pretty robotic.
Yeah, it is fairly limited. You know, they like, ironically, like Amazon's platform and everything is like built around how like easy it is to do everything. And it's like subscribe and say this, sorry, you don't get this discount if you don't bundle these other items, or if these other items don't ship all at once. Like, you know, I think we're starting to see even a lot of smaller brands that are starting to have better subscription offerings than what you can get through an Amazon subscribe and save.
Yeah. I'll just mention another brand that I've seen do a really good job around just their subscription experience is BarkBox, going back to dogs and stuff, where you know, they use that opportunity in the upcoming shipment email to upsell you and cross sell you, which is again something that we suggest to people, where it's like, yeah, the ability for someone saying, hey, we're like the order, this upcoming order reminder has one of the highest open rates for of any of the emails you're going to send to a customer. And so that's a great opportunity to either, if someone is in that place of wanting to cancel, and they making it easy for them to swap, or also reinforcing, hey, you can also add additional things to this product. There's still time. So it's not like a hard sell. It's more of a, hey, this is actually useful. And then there's these sort of soft reminders of, hey, here's some other things you can do.
That's exactly kind of circling back to what we were saying, is like, that's the place to reinforce why you're buying this. And I think the upsell opportunity, I mean, honestly, I know that brands understand this, that they need to upsell, but finding the opportunities to do that well and effectively is sometimes there seems to be like a gap in like understanding how to do that well. But with product recommendations and other things like bundling options, that's the best, personally, I think that's the best place to use discounts, is not so much like, here's just a discount on your order, but here's discount to try this product. Like, add this product to your order and you'll get 20% off your order, right? Like,
yeah,
those are great ways to incentivize people to use it. The other one I recommend a lot too is, depending on whether you have this, not every brand is doing this, but either sample products or like a smaller count, like, you know, something that's just, you know, whether it's a, again, trial size or something like that, because from a shipping standpoint, again, the shipping guy is like, it's easy to just put into the box, right? Like, here's something free, we got something coming, or here's a free sample and here's an insert, right? It's not like technically very hard to just start. Well, it's hard to know which boxes to put it into, but from fulfillment, but physical inserts is another great way to be reinforcing that stuff as well.
And that reminds me, just going back to like the flexibility of, at least one of the things that I've seen too, is just conceptually most people, and do you guys work with any like beauty brands? Mm-hmm. Like one thing that I've heard from a number of beauty brands is, and even speaking with my wife and some of her friends, is different products have different replenishment periods. So if you're buying mascara versus shampoo, right? Like you might have one subscription, but the replenishment period is extremely different. And so what ends up happening is, you know, so some of the smart things that we've seen done is being able to control the interval of individual line items, right? So one gets replenished every 30 days, another one gets replenished every 60 days. If you actually have two separate subscriptions and they're renewing within like 3 days of each other, fulfill them together, fulfill them early. Because again, a lot of the cost around shipping, like that's the sunk cost for a lot of these brands.
A brand using our platform, Herbsmith and Pet Food, something they do that's I think is really, really cool is, you know, you go to their homepage, Herbsmith Inc., and they have you take a survey about your dog, right? So this is again getting to the every dog is different kind of thing, but they have somebody fill out all these questions about your pet type, and then they have some like a professional vet like basically evaluating some of those and recommends products, and you get an email with a link. Once you click it, it populates a cart for you, right? And all these products are preset on subscriptions, and they're all in different frequencies, right? Because the pet food is a 60-day bag, the, you know, these chew toys are, these treats are a 30-day bag, the teeth cleaner is 45 days, you know, so you can see a list of all these different things at different frequencies, because yeah, you want them to buy all that stuff, but they don't come on all the same sizes and they don't get consumed all the same way. So you need to be able to offer that at the frequencies that they need.
Yeah, which again becomes a design challenge where it's, does it make sense conceptually as a single subscription? Does it make sense treating them as individual subscriptions? Because a lot of this is, at least conceptually, I think of it, oh, I subscribe to this brand, right? And I think that at least the way that I tend to think about it and the brands that we speak to is, oftentimes, and it's a testament to people swapping products, it's like you're subscribing to the mother brand. You're not subscribing necessarily to an individual product. And so the, like, just the behavior around swapping and switching is just evidence of that, where, yeah, like you're not subscribing to that one SKU. You're subscribing to the brand experience, and we'll call it the portfolio of products. And so how do you make it easy as a consumer to both manage the subscriptions, but also make it easier on like operations, where does the person have five different subscriptions? Conceptually, it should be one subscription, where then like the software itself takes responsible for dealing with effectively on the operations side, making it as easy as possible to, you know, consolidate shipments.
being able to see those broken out in the account page, right? In the portal, right? Where people could see that, right? They need to be able to understand that that's happening.
Yeah. Anything else that comes to mind is worth talking about, or any tips and tricks that you'd recommend for brands who are looking to up their subscription game or even doing like an initial audit?
I would say, you know, there's always a lot of discussion around discounts, how much they should offer and stuff. So this might just be, you know, might be really obvious to everybody else, but, you know, first understanding your unit economics, right? Of like what you can afford to sell things at. The second is discounts. I often recommend people, like, they should be doing something fairly low, at least first, but I do believe you should be testing like higher discounts to get people that might be on the fence or not. So one recommendation is to do cohort analysis on sales, right? So offer a weekend, make a weekend offer of 20% when it's normally 10%, right? And it's 20% lifetime, and see what the churn is. Now, the assumption is you're gonna have higher churn initially, but if you can still grab a group out of that cohort that are gonna stick around for a long time, then that can make it worth it. You've now added, maybe you've added another 100 subscribers or 200 subscribers to your platform. And yes, they're not quite as profitable as the rest, but it's still profit from a unit economic standpoint. So that's one thing. The other one just kind of slipped my mind, but thinking about too much at once. You know, one thing I learned recently on one of our teardowns was using pop-ups for sales pages so that you have your product page, being able to give options for additional information about your product, about why it works, explaining pricing, employing pop-ups for that is a really great way to kind of overcome additional objections as well.
And is that like exit intent pop-ups or just pop-ups that like when the page loads?
No, just like hyperlinked, right? So, you know, if you're talking about, so like, you know, talking about the cool feature behind your product, right? Everybody says like our stuff is like liquid death might be like our water comes from the fires of hell, right? And so fires of hell is hyperlinked. So when you click on it, it doesn't go to a different page. It opens up a pop-up that says, here's a picture of the fires of hell and why water from there is so much better than regular, right? So that way they can just, they don't actually leave the product page, but it gives them an option to get a little bit more information. So again, I would say a lot of this is like wrapping up my whole mentality is understanding why people are buying. And if you can find ways to improve conversion because you understand why they're buying or why they're not buying, that's going to improve the length of your subscription program, and then reinforcing those reasons throughout the life of the subscription.
I'm curious, have you seen any data around progressive discounts? Like that's one thing that we've been experimenting with where, you know, first month is 5%, then it's so it's renewal based.
We have a customer doing that. Yeah, it's Hemp My Pet. They do 5% a month up all the way up to 30. And yeah, they are much higher than average LTV than the rest of the other pet food brands on our platform.
Yeah, because I guess the question there is obviously, there's a trade-off around acquisition, presumably.
Yes, absolutely. So like I said, they're not going to run that thing I just said to try to acquire new customers by offering a higher discount, because that would be going against their mission for their brand of loyal subscribers. So they're approaching just a little bit differently. They're approaching the community culture, product engagement aspect, and they're creating a feeling of exclusivity around you only get this kind of discount if you go longer and longer. Another one I was just talking to too is they're an essential oils company, Young Living. So they're running network marketing campaigns, and they're transitioning to like more standard e-commerce practices. And some of what they're talking about is like they're giving discounts and membership discounts based off of how many subscriptioners you cycled in a row, right? And if you cancel, you lose out on, it's like you have to start over. And so that's a one way of like they hold on to people longer is if you cancel, you're not going to get the discount you were getting. You'd have to start all the way over again too.
Got it. Yeah. Interesting.
So I'd say it comes back to the approach of the brand. Yeah. Like which approach they're taking, whether they should be using that or not. But yeah.
Cool. Well, you know, where can people find you, and like, how can they subscribe to Subscription Prescription? And are you active on Twitter? And yeah.
I'm very active on LinkedIn. I'm trying to get better at Twitter, but I am on Twitter, MPH Running, and then Matthew Holman on LinkedIn. I've got a link in my, you know, articles to the registering for the newsletter.
The newsletter. We'll link to all of those places in the show notes.
Subscription Prescription.
Yeah, your daily dose or weekly dose. Yeah. Well, awesome. Thanks so much for coming on the show. And it was a fun conversation.
Absolutely. I had a blast. Thanks, Ben.